You're listening to The Source, news you can use.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The Source News, coming to you on 4EB. You're with Ashley Jansen.
And Sakara Bell on your drive home. Coming up today, we'll hear more about the tampon tax and what it means for you.
And an exciting new trial is hoping to bring solar-powered ferries to the Gold Coast. Now to Maddie Wilson with the latest news.
A busy Gold Coast road has become gridlocked after a three-car accident caused onlookers in the opposite side of the road to collide. A total of six cars were involved and it left only one lane operational in Bundle. Police and paramedics were called to the scene to treat two of the people involved. A man who allegedly raped a 13-year-old Sydney boy after meeting on social media has not been sentenced. The 40-year-old was charged with sexual intercourse without consent after appearing in Parramatta Bail Court. The incident has police warning parents about monitoring their child's use of social media and online activity. Farmers in Western Australia and Western New South Wales are happier than ever after receiving more rainfall in one night than they have in the past year. The amount of rain is enough to bring farmers in Broken Hill to tears, but the Bureau of Meteorology is unsure if the rain will be enough to break the drought. Travellers heading to New Zealand could be facing up to $5,000 in fines if they refuse to hand over their phone passwords during digital strip searches. A new law coming into place this week has travellers outraged that officials can now do a file-by-file search on their devices. New Zealand is the first country to put into place a penalty if travellers refuse to give over their passwords. I'm Maddie Wilson and you're listening to 4EB, The Source News. Now back to Sakara and Ashley.
And now the Australian government has abolished the 18-year-old tampon tax after all territory and state treasurers made a majority decision yesterday. Tilly Hannum reports. Baby, now we're good. You know we used to be. So take a look what you've done.
For 18 years, women have been paying a 10% goods and service tax on female sanitary products such as tampons and pads. But starting January 1st, 2019, the $30 million a year tax on these menstrual products will be abolished. Yesterday, treasurers from every state and territory in Australia unanimously agreed to the Federal Treasurer's Josh Frydenberg's proposal of eliminating the 10% luxury levy on the products. The decision comes after nearly two decades of protests and campaigns from women's groups against the GST, with the main argument being that these products are essential items and therefore should be exempt from the tax. The GST on these products have also been described as unfair because products such as condoms, lubricants and even Viagra have never been subject to the tax since it was established in 2001. Former Treasurer Joe Hockey vowed to end the tax on tampons in 2015, but it was overruled by the Prime Minister at the time, Tony Abbott. Victorian Greens Senator Janet Rice, who has been heavily involved in the campaign, says it's a win for Australian women, but these products should have never been taxed in the first place.
Look, it's an historic win. It really is. It's something that women and so many Australians have been campaigning so hard for 18 years to remove this tax, which has been a sexist and unfair tax, should never have been applied in the first place.
Tampons, pads, menstrual cups, maternity pads and leak-proof underwear are expected to be included in the exemption list. We asked some young women their opinion on the abolishment of the tax. Here's what they had to say.
I think it's a good step towards equal rights in Australia. It's such an outdated and discriminatory tax, and I'm happy that I can now access these products at a lesser price.
I think it's great because we don't get to choose to have a period. It wasn't right that the government taxed women on something that they cannot control for 18 years. And as a uni student, I am so pleased that I will be saving money on these products.
Rochelle Courtney, founder and managing director of Share the Dignity, an Australian women's charity bringing dignity to homeless women through distributing of sanitary items, says this is one step closer to gender equality in Australia.
Equality is what it means first. I think it means the most that it was a really sexist and archaic tax and it's a step in the right direction.
Australia falls behind the Canadian government, who abolished the tax in 2015. As well as Ireland, India, and even some states in the United States have already removed the tax. Both Janet Rice and Rochelle Courtney agree in saying that if there were more women in the room in 2001 when the GST was put in place, the tax would have never happened.
it was clear that, you know, there weren't enough women in the room, I'd say, that when this decision was being made. And then once it was in place, then the governments weren't willing to give up on this source of revenue. There were really only men sitting around the table making these decisions. I just think that we're looking at it now through different eyes. When you have equality in Parliament, you have numbers, you have different views.
Tilly Hannon for The Source News.
Bill Shorten's Labor Party has announced today that they plan to subsidise childcare for over 700,000 children if elected. Jack Holt reports.
Labor has announced today they'll be contributing $1.75 billion to early childcare if they win the next federal election. The two-year National Preschool and Kindy programme will aim to give 700,000 children access to subsidised preschool and kindergarten programmes from ages of 3 to 5. Katie Luck, a childcare professional and a mother of a four-year-old, believes sending children to preschool at the age of three is too young.
Way too young in the head to concentrate, to learn things. So, yeah, I think three is a little bit too little. All kids are different. Some kids, like I've got a group of four-year-olds, some are behind, some are smart. It depends on the children, to be honest. So there's a lot of things that come into it. Just because they're three, all children are different.
The Shorten government hopes each child will be able to access 15 hours of learning for 40 weeks of the year. 57% of three-year-olds in Australia access early childcare learning, which Labor hopes to increase. Labor had a similar programme in 2008, which increased the number of four-year-olds in school from 77% to 93%. About 80% of brain development occurs by the time a human is three, increasing to 90% by the age of five. President of the Queensland Teachers Union, Kevin Bates, says the increase in funding from the Labor government will be much appreciated.
What we know is that investment in early childhood education is crucial to preparing young people for their formal schooling once they start primary school and prep. So the investment in an additional 15 hours of early childhood education for three-year-olds that's proposed by the Labor government is certainly very welcome and will do a lot to help to prepare those young people for their formal start of schooling.
Samantha Page, CEO of Early Childhood Australia, states that even if Labor do not win the next election, the plan should still go ahead to subsidise early childhood learning.
I mean, the evidence is so strong. I would really like Australia to have a commitment to early education that crosses all major political parties, crosses state, territory and federal government levels, even local government. I think we really should be able to reach a consensus about the importance of investing in early education.
So what is learning in preschool? The five categories of learning are physical, social, emotional, cognitive and language development. Each category of development is based on the key behaviours that children should be displaying after leaving early education. In physical, they should be able to use alternating feet to climb steps, be able to hold a pencil, establish their preferred handedness, and being able to undress without any significant assistance. In social and emotional, they should demonstrate they enjoy playing with other children, cooperate with their peers, understand when someone is hurt, give and receive affection from parents. For cognitive development, children should show the ability to understand positional and opposite words, use objects and materials to construct things like towers, count up to 10, be able to talk to themselves, have memorised numbers and may be able to write number and letters. And for language, have the ability to answer simple questions, be inquisitive, use adult forms of speech and show assertions of themselves with words. These skills are harder to acquire at a later age and they're best developed between the ages of 3 and 5. Jack Holt, reporting for The Source News.
Queensland Mental Health Week is around the corner, and with the current Me Too movement on the rise, there is a growing need for conversation about the effects of abuse on mental health. Isabel Condon reports.
Queensland is gearing up to celebrate Mental Health Week starting this Saturday, with the current Me Too movement as a backdrop for starting the conversation regarding mental health among women. In the last month, sexual assault allegations overseas involving celebrities has sparked conversation all over the world through social media. Queensland Mental Health Week raises awareness in the local community as effects of psychological and physical abuse on mental health are considered among the public. Beyond Blue's research shows that 1 million Australians live with depression and a further 2 million suffer from anxiety. Mental Health Week encourages society to focus on relationships and how they impact our mental health, especially when emotional, physical or sexual abuse is involved. Our Watch organisation have also provided statistics that young women aged 18 to 24 years old experience significantly high rates of physical and sexual violence. Queensland had 6,000 reported sexual offences in 2017 to 2018 alone. Gold Coast Uni student Tyler Dingsoy says her experience with emotional abuse has impacted on her relationships with others.
In the long run, I feel it just messes with your trust, and then you have trust issues with other people you have friendships and relationships with. So you end up getting used to people leaving you.
If you or someone you know is impacted by sexual assault, domestic or family violence, call 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732. Or visit 1800respect.org.au. Isabel Condon for The Source News.
In an exciting development, the Gold Coast will begin a two-year trial for a solar-powered ferry service on the Broadwater. Eden Parks reports.
The Gold Coast is set to launch a two-year ferry service trial by mid to late next year following a meeting with the state government. The 12-stop ferry service will run through the Broadwater and Narang River using solar-powered catamarans. Mayor Tom Tate met with Transport Minister Mark Bailey this week, where the plan was given the go-ahead. The catamarans will be able to travel 13 kilometres from Labrador to Surfers Paradise at 12 to 18 knots in just 36 minutes under current plans. Minister Bailey says he's always happy to hear about any projects that could improve public transport for Queenslanders. Mayor Tate says they are the closest they've been to getting this plan underway. However, issues such as appropriate speeds, docking areas and operating hours all need to be looked into further. The plan is being sold as a potential congestion buster for the city, with council studies indicating it will supposedly take around 3,500 cars off the road daily. Local residents will be notified on any new developments in the plan that could affect their suburb. Eden Parks for The Source News.
Questions have been raised about whether dating apps and Australia's party culture are playing a part in the increasing rates of STDs in Queensland. Monica Adair reports.
Australia is known for its party culture, and with the rise of dating apps like Tinder, questions have been raised about whether these factors have something to do with the increasing rates of STIs and STDs in Queensland. The Centre for Disease Control and Prevention released a report that incidence and prevalence show that young people are acquiring more than half of all the new STDs. Specialist sexual health physician Dr. Stuart Aitken says that there are a number of factors that may be impacting these statistics.
One of the key factors is rate of partner change. So having a hookup app means that potential for having partner change is increased, so rates of STI acquisition are increased as well. But again, that doesn't have to be an equation. That period of life is a period where we do have sexual exploration, where I guess the standard norm is sort of serial monogamy in sort of heterosexual environments, where people will have like a series of partners one after the other. Some of it is going to be anatomy. So for young women, for instance, the structure of the cervix is slightly different, and the cells that chlamydia is looking for cover a greater area of the cervix for young women than they do for older women.
University student Riley Adams says that he has noticed the difference in dating culture since the rise of dating apps.
My experience, I'm 24 years old, I had a distinct change when the dating app Tinder and other similar ones came out, and I noticed that the way that people, not all everyone, but quite a few people viewed relationships and the way process of dating and meeting new people is supposed to happen, their view of that changed, and in my opinion, probably not for the better. The revolution of the dating app and online dating and has ultimately contributed greatly to the increase in sexually transmitted infections.
Queensland Health Report has shown that chlamydia cases have risen 13% since September 2012, when Tinder was first launched. Dr. Aitken says that this is alarming, as chlamydia can have permanent implications if left untreated.
Permanent consequences, when we're thinking of things like chlamydia, the main thing is going to be about pelvic inflammatory disease, inflammation of the endometrium, the lining of the uterus, fallopian tubes and associated structures.
He says that the good news is that doctors seem to be catching infections early before they can create permanent damage, however.
So although chlamydia rates have increased consistently for a long, long period of time, we haven't seen increases in pelvic inflammatory disease, which is very, very good news.
There is support for uni students and other youth as well. Vanessa Calvert at Griffith University Student Services says the university offers a range of health services, including those for sexual health.
generally we have women's and men's health checkups in terms of our doctor's appointment as well as our nurses. For students, it's either bulk billed with Medicare or automatically billed with OSHC Allianz.
Monica Adair for The Source News.
Over 50 million Facebook users have had their privacy breached after hackers made their way through the network via loophole in the system. Julia Langton reports.
Facebook is in the midst of its worst security breach yet, with over 50 million users affected in the recent social media hacking scandal. The issue was raised by Facebook on Saturday after the engineering team discovered a serious security breach by a group of hackers gaining access to Facebook servers. Staff released a statement explaining that attackers exploited a vulnerability in Facebook's code that impacted the View As feature that lets people see what their own profile looks like to someone else. Facebook also confirmed that this is what allowed the hackers to steal Facebook access tokens, which they used to ultimately take over people's accounts. Associate Professor of Communication Technology, Valapura Mutu, is adamant in reminding users to be aware of the risks online.
The security is a balancing act, so usability and security is coming into the picture all the time. As a user, we prefer the convenience, but that goes most of the time against the security aspect of it. So the awareness and taking care of the private information, the security features.
The Source News took to the streets to see if the public still trusts Facebook with their personal information.
If I was one of those 50 million people, I'd be really upset that all my information had been taken from me. But at the same time, it would sort of make me realise that I had been pretty naive to give all of my information out in the first place.
If you don't want your information to be put out there, then don't put it out there in the first place. Facebook is a free service. Why should you expect anything more than that?
CNBC and Facebook have also confirmed a further 40 million users connected to the compromised accounts could still be deemed at risk. The incident is feared to have taken charge of third-party accounts such as Spotify, Instagram, and Uber, which all require Facebook credentials to log in. This puts not only general identifying data like date of birth and work details at risk, but also more classified information like credit card details and location services in the hands of the wrong people. Today's show tech expert Trevor Long suggests online users should always be cautious with where they place their information online.
In the end, the number one thing people need to do is protect their access to their account. Certainly, when you're sharing things on Facebook, you should try and ensure that you're only sharing them with friends, but even in these kind of breach situations, that becomes irrelevant because the information is made public. But as a general security reminder for people, you should always have a strong and secure password.
Facebook has insisted software engineers have taken immediate action to the breach and informed the necessary law enforcement agencies. They have confirmed a full reset of all of the access tokens that were susceptible to the attack, and as a result, over 90 million users will now have to re-log back into their accounts. Julia Langton for The Source News.
It's 17 past five and still to come. The Gold Coast is currently hosting the Transplant Games.
And Craig Lowndes takes to the mountain for one last time at Bathurst. The federal opposition is promising to set up a $300 million university future fund, and if it wins the next election, Janelle Miller reports.
Shadow Education Minister Tanya Plibersek has promised a $300 million fund to pay for university research facilities, including labs and other infrastructures. The opposition's proposed university future fund would also provide money for projects that would create jobs and economic growth. National Tertiary Education Union President Jenny Ray believes this grant is pertinent to the long-term goals of university planning.
There does need to be investment looking to the future rather than all these just-in-time type response for a political party to look put aside funds and keep increasing funds, as in this the EIF, is that sort of long-term planning that we really need.
Labor will ask the university sector for submissions on how to spend its proposed $300 million future fund, and projects will be selected based on their merit and alignment with national interest. The announcement comes on top of Labor's promise to uncap university places in response to the Coalition's two-year unlegislated freeze in Commonwealth grants. Janelle Miller, The Source News.
The protection of native wildlife is at the top of everyone's list. However, recent proposals from ministers right across Australia have raised concerns. Mary Jo Dowsett reports.
Tasmania is home to an abundance of wildlife, with many of them being native to the island and many who are facing extinction due to multiple threats. The swift parrot is one such animal whose numbers have significantly dropped in recent years. In response to the dwindling parrot numbers, the Tasmanian government has begun planning ways in which to combat the issue, starting with culling the sugar glider, an animal believed to be responsible for the decline of the swift parrot. The plan includes investing $150,000 towards trapping the sugar gliders within nest boxes right across Tasmania, before eventually being culled. Spokesperson for Animal Liberation Tasmania, Ms. Christy Alger, says the government's new plan is merely a quick fix and little thought has been put into the long-term solution.
By culling sugar gliders without any future planning to control breeding numbers, without any future planning to control deforestation, habitat loss, all of these issues that are significantly impacting the swift parrot, it's going to be an ineffective measure. And what will end up happening is next breeding cycle, they're just going to have to go out and kill all over again. What we could actually instead be looking at is looking at the human impact on the swift parrot and alleviating pressure that way so that we don't actually have to go out wholesale massacring other animals.
Ms. Alger believes the government's decision to solely blame the sugar glider is simply the easier option.
It's easier than tackling forestry. It's easier than tackling deforestation. It's easier than tackling human behaviours. It's basically looking outwards and scapegoating another species. But as it happens, we're responsible for its presence here, and we're also responsible for its increased coming into contact with the swift parrot. It's just easier all around to blame the sugar glider than to actually look to ourselves.
Professor of Wildlife Conservation at the University of Tasmania, Chris Johnson, says although the decision is likely to be unsuccessful in the long run, it may be a necessary step to help keep the swift parrot alive.
I think as a long-term strategy, it's probably not sensible. But the other way to look at this is that we're in a bit of a crisis at the moment. The current rate of predation by sugar gliders on swift parrots is really high, and any sensible prediction is that swift parrots are heading rapidly to extinction. So we probably need to act quickly so that the animals don't go extinct, you know, while we're wondering about a more sustainable long-term strategy.
Recent proposals made by the Randwick City Council in Sydney to keep domestic cats indoors has also raised concerns, with Liberal Councillor Harry Stavrinos saying the idea is unenforceable.
I know that there are 12 million feral cats in Australia that are causing quite a lot of destruction to our ecosystem and to our native fauna and flora. But what I resent is when we have a council trying to target responsible pet owners. If we are going to approach this issue, we need to look at it from other perspectives. What can we do? What sort of programs can we offer to encourage responsible pet ownership? Not by trying to enforce laws that are unenforceable and won't be policed.
Mr. Stavrinos believes governments and councils are becoming too protective, implementing unnecessary laws that are affecting the general public.
People in New South Wales, or people for that matter right across Australia, are fed up with living in a nanny state where we're overgoverned by all these rules and regulations that mean nothing and they can't be enforced. And we've got to a stage now where we're basically telling people what they can and what they can't do, and people are fed up.
Mary Jo Dowsett for The Source News.
The Gold Coast is currently hosting the Australian Transplant Games at various venues used during the Commonwealth Games. Christina Trajkovski reports.
Founded by the Australian Transplant Sports Association in the 1980s, Transplant Australia is a charity which supports all those touched by organ and tissue donation. And the games they organise and support will officially begin on Sunday and will be continuing till this Saturday. The Australian Transplant Games are held every 2 years in a different state, territory, or city of Australia and provide living proof of the success of organ donation and transplantation, encouraging all Australians to participate in and discuss organ and tissue donation. The spirit of the games is to encourage individuals to be involved in a sporting competition so that they can maintain a healthy lifestyle, live long lives, and honour the gift of organ donation. Many competitors participating in this year's games have not been able to engage in any form of sporting activity before their transplant, and the games offer them the opportunity to fulfil their goals, and even offers a select few the opportunity to represent Australia at the World Transplant Games. Transplant Australia boasts an enviable record of influencing public understanding and registering of organ and tissue donation through the staging of the Australian Transplant Games. CEO of Transplant Australia, Chris Thomas, states that the games are a great way to raise awareness as well as showcase that recipients are alive, healthy, and participating in the games due to the donations that provide the gift of life.
The purpose of Transplant Australia is to raise awareness amongst the Australian population of the value of organ and tissue donation and to encourage all Australians to register as organ donors. We are able to do this through Australian Transplant Games, and that casts a spotlight on the people who have benefited from donation. So the Transplant Games are really designed to show that there are people out there who, if it wasn't for their organ donors, wouldn't be alive today.
As Australia's largest awareness activity for organ and tissue donation, the games cover a multitude of sports and recreational activities, from triathlons to Sudoku, thus giving individuals the opportunity to try sports and activities they have not participated in before due to their illness, setting various health and fitness goals along the way. Australian Transplant Games swim competition participant Natalie Hazelwood states that the games encourage transplant individuals like herself to get back into sport, which helped her to maintain a healthy mindset and lifestyle.
I was a teenager diagnosed with 3 different autoimmune diseases, and 2 of those attacked my liver. And over time, it just got so bad that and I needed a transplant. Before I got sick, I was a really athletic kid. I was a competitive swimmer, and being able to participate in the swimming was really, really good for me.
Aussie motorsport fans are revved up for another exciting weekend of racing at Mount Panorama, with the Bathurst 1000 practice sessions commencing today. Kyle Hexer reports.
The practice rounds for the first day at the Bathurst 1000 have already concluded, warming up the races for the qualifying rounds and the 161-lap V8 Supercar Championship race. In the 60-minute preliminary practice run at 9:30 today, Will Davidson held the fastest lap time at 2 minutes 25.2 seconds. Bathurst Mayor Graham Hanger spoke about the effects of the event in the local area and says it's a massive positive event.
As many as 40,000 visitors come into town. We've got camping on the mountain for over 35,000 visitors. It's really quite amazing. We've added a new campsite this year, so it has a massive effect on the local community. We're really happy to have them here in town.
This year is also the final run for Craig Lowndes, retiring champion of the 888 race engineering team, who has won 6 times in previous years. The King of the Mountain won first place in 2015, making it his 6th win since 1996. He currently ranks 4th in the 2018 championship with 2,061 points, but will retire once the championship is over. The Bathurst 1000 will continue through the rest of the week and over the weekend, with many races and supercars trying to take on the mountain. Kyle Hexer, reporting sport.
Now to Sam and Christina with your sport and weather wrap-up.
In rugby league, Mel Meninga has named Dane Gagai as Greg Inglis' replacement for the upcoming test series against New Zealand and Tonga, commencing later this month. Meninga was forced to make the change after Inglis was stood down for 2 matches and stripped of the national captaincy after being arrested for drink driving and speeding earlier this week. Boyd Cordner has been named as a new captain in Inglis' absence. In cricket, Australia will be looking to put the match-fixing scandal behind them as they begin their 2-match series against Pakistan in Dubai this Sunday. New Australian coach Justin Langer looks set to name 3 debutants for the first test, with Aaron Finch, Travis Head and Manus Lobashane all in line to receive their maiden baggy green caps. While in domestic cricket news, Lobashane's Queensland Bulls teammates managed to upset the South Australian Redbacks in their JLT Cup Series qualifying final last night. The Bulls posted a mammoth total of 5 for 363 on the back of half centuries from Joe Burns, Jimmy Pearson, Sam Heaslett and Chris Lynn, with the Redbacks falling 23 runs short of the total in a rain-affected match. Bulls bowler Mitchell Swepson claimed end of the match honours with figures of 3 for 64, with Queensland to meet Tasmania in the semi-finals this Saturday. In UFC, Conor McGregor will make his long-awaited return to the octagon when he faces arch-rival Khabib Nurmagomedov for the lightweight title in UFC 229 this Sunday. The Irish superstar will be looking to regain the lightweight title he vacated from his Russian rival, who boasts an impressive 26-0 record in the octagon. This weekend's fight will mark McGregor's first fight since his mega bout with boxing legend Floyd Mayweather in 2017. Now to Christine with the weather.
Getting down to 17 degrees tonight with the chance of light rain. Tomorrow is expected to bring rain at various intervals throughout the day with the chance of a storm. A wet weekend is forecast with the Bureau predicting up to 30 millimetres of rain. Right now it's 23 degrees at Broadbeach on the Gold Coast. Now it's back to Ash and Sakara.
Thanks for tuning in for all your latest news, sport and weather here on 4EB. This has been the Source News with Sakara Bell
and Ashley Jansen.
The Source, news you can use.